Blog Talk Radio.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from really incredibly beautiful Southern California. What a gorgeous spring day here in paradise. I want to welcome you to this evening's show. We're going to be talking once again to Robert Swartz, who you may remember is the author of Courageous Souls, and that's now being re-released as Your Soul's Plan, Discovering the Real Meaning of Life You Planned Before You Were Born. So we are absolutely delighted to have Robert back. But before we bring Robert on, I want to remind you that if you haven't signed up for Joe Dunning's free Abundance Breakthrough Project, you'll want to go to her website at joedunning.com. Last Thursday, you may remember, she was on telling us about this terrific free project which will create a wave of abundance globally. As she energizes our ability to allow money to flow to us. And here's how it works. You sign up at joedunning.com under the free events and then under abundance. And that's all there is to it. You just put your name in there. There's no money involved whatsoever. On April 15th, she will read each name, which she will energize by transforming the energy around it. And then she wants you to pause at noon on April 15th, your time, just to feel and appreciate your current abundance. Then you might want to go throughout the day and donate a dollar or two to charity or take some cans of food to the food bank or just do something special for someone and get into that abundance feeling. And that's all there is to it. Now, to make this go around the world globally, we need you to send an email to all your friends and relatives and tell them to sign up. Here's the key to all of this. They must sign up on their own because this gives Joe the consent to transform their energy and so that they can allow the abundance in their life. So it's really important that you go sign up first, and then within the 5 seconds, you'll get another email from Joe in which you can send that to all your family and friends. And if you happen to be on the Law of Attraction Radio website, simply click on Joe Dunning's gold graphic there, and then that will redirect you to her page where you can sign up immediately. And if you want to get a jump start onto the energy transformation that's going to be occurring, listen to last Thursday's show. It was really spectacular. And if you remember, any time you listen to Jo Dunning, whenever she's on the show, her energy stays with that. So you can listen to it as many times as you want, and you will still retain the same energy benefits. It's really amazing how that works, but actually it's quite scientific and documented. So Joe truly is an incredible, incredible healer, a miracle worker. So pay attention, and if you really want that abundance flowing to you, then it's definitely not going to hurt you to go to her website and sign up for it. In a few weeks, I'm going to be introducing to you a fantastic virtual world that is so incredible. I really want you to stay tuned for this. The Law of Attraction Radio Network is going to be a major media partner in this, and we are in the process of creating something that will help all of you create your reality much faster than you ever realized. And if you want a sneak peek into this, go to CyrusWorld.com, that's C-Y-R-E-S World.com, which is really creating your reality self-world. I will be able to meet many of you there eventually, within hopefully a couple of weeks, and be able to take you on a magical ride that will actually reflect back into your physical life. I am so excited about this, so keep tuning in. The best is yet to be. Well, now let's get on with tonight's show with Robert Swartz, author of the new title of the book, Your Soul's Plan, Discovering the Real Meaning of Life You Planned Before You Were Born. Here's just a little bit of background on Robert. In a personal session with a medium in 2003, Robert Swartz was astonished to speak with non-physical beings who knew everything about him, not just what he had done in his life, but also what he had thought and felt. They told him that he had planned many of the most difficult experiences before he was born, realizing that a knowledge of pre-birth planning would bring in great healing to many people and allow them to understand the deeper purpose of their life challenges. He devoted the next 3 years to studying the pre-birth plans of dozens of individuals. Prior to his spiritual awakening, Mr. Swartz was a freelance journalist for such publications as Life Magazine and U.S. News and World Report. Very, very excited. Well, thanks for coming back on, Robert. This is just wonderful that you could join us tonight.
It's a pleasure to be back, Jules.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you back. And, you know, this is so exciting because I hear you were picked up by another publisher. Is that correct? Is that the reason for the name change?
Yes, that's right. The original title of the book, Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth, that is a self-published edition, and I came out with that in at the end of 2006, beginning of 2007. But last year, North Atlantic Books, specifically their Frog Books imprint, picked it up, and they are releasing it on March 24th under the title you mentioned, Your Soul's Plan, Discovering the Real Meaning of the Life You Planned Before You Were Born. And we have a website at yoursoulsplan.com for your listeners, and they can download part of the book for free there.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, I'm very excited for you. I think that's wonderful. I'm glad you got picked up by a publisher. This is great. It's going to get in the hands of more people, don't you think?
Well, one of the things I'm most excited about is that it's going to be distributed worldwide by Random House. And I've always felt that what I'm trying to do here is make this information about how we plan our lives before we're born available to anybody who would like to know about it. And so the fact that it will get this kind of distribution is something that's very gratifying to me.
Oh, absolutely. That's wonderful. You're really going to be touching the world here. Now, let's start off at the beginning and talk about what inspired you to delve into writing a book about souls, because really, you were into, well, Life Magazine. You were into doing other kinds of articles, so this is really, really something for you.
Well, you know, I was a freelance journalist, as you mentioned, for a number of years, and then I transitioned from that actually into more corporate work. I picked up an MBA at one point, and I was doing corporate marketing and communications, basically business writing, which was not at all fulfilling to me. And I often tell people that I had the feeling that if I fell off the face of the earth, none of my clients would even know that I was gone. They would just put someone else into my place and carry right along. So it was really, Jules, a career crisis of sorts that launched me on this path, although I didn't know it at the time. But under the pretext of trying to figure out what my higher calling or higher purpose was in life, I went for the very first time ever to work with a medium, and this was in May of 2003. It was actually on May 7th, and I remember the day because really everything in my life changed on that particular day. The medium was able, in this case, to channel my spirit guides, and they introduced to me this concept of pre-birth planning, that we plan our lives, including our greatest challenges, before we're born. Now, coming from a very conventional background, as I did, and having sort of a reporter's mentality, I found this difficult to accept. And I think I probably would have discarded the entire idea as some sort of fantasy, except that in this session with the medium, as you said in your introduction, information came up from the guides that indicated that they knew literally everything about me. And I mean, they knew not only what I had done in my life, but they knew about private thoughts and private feelings that I had never shared with anyone before. And I'll give your listeners an example, because this made such a deep impression on me.
Mm-hmm.
The guides referred to a prayer that I had said privately in my own home, alone, and silently, not even aloud, but silently, 5 years earlier. Now, I had been going through a very difficult time in my personal life then, and the prayer I said was very short and simple. It was, "Dear God, I can't get through this alone. Please send help." Now, this was 5 years ago. I had even forgotten that I had said this, but the guides knew about it. They reminded me of it, and they said to me through the medium, "Your prayer was answered," by which I believe they meant that additional non-physical guidance had been sent to me. And they went on and they said a number of other things like that to indicate that they knew the most private aspects of my life that I had never shared with anybody. So when they introduced this idea of pre-birth planning, at that point in the conversation, they had said enough to establish their credibility beyond any doubt. And when they brought up this idea, I was listening very, very closely. And in the days and weeks after this session was over, I thought about this idea constantly, and I realized it was something that could bring great healing to people. In other words, I think there's a tendency when something quote-unquote bad happens to us, we often don't see any deeper meaning to it. It just seems like random, arbitrary suffering, like God or the universe is punishing us. But if we could understand that in many cases, it's something we ourselves set up as a challenge before birth to foster our own growth and evolution, then it becomes rich with meaning. It has purpose, and the meaning and purpose lighten the suffering and allow us to look at it in a completely different way.
Mm. Yeah. Well, so you, in your book, you took a lot of people, or quite a few people, that had really disturbing things that happened to them that they didn't quite understand, and you met with the psychic mediums to get them answers as to why things were happening to them. Is that correct?
The book, Your Soul's Plan, is, the chapters are organized by type of life challenge. So there's a chapter on the pre-birth planning of physical illness, a chapter on the pre-birth planning of deafness and blindness, alcoholism and drug addiction, the death of a loved one, having handicapped children, severe accidents, challenges like that that are fairly common. And the reason I set it up this way is that I wanted to cover things that a lot of people have experienced, and they wonder why did this happen to them or to someone that they know. And then we did exactly what you just said. Each person I spoke with, they had usually two, sometimes three sessions with different mediums and channels in which we would pose the question to Spirit, did this person plan this challenge before he or she was born, and if so, why? And then in the book, Your Soul's Plan, I present the information that comes forward from Spirit as to why this event or this challenge was planned before birth. And the reason for working with different mediums and channels was to cross-check the information that was coming forward and also to get complementary or supplemental information about the pre-birth plan. Importantly, the different mediums and channels who are my collaborators have different sets of skills that allow them to access this information from different points of view. For example, I worked with a woman in Arizona, Stacy Wells, who can actually see and hear the conversations we have with one another before we're born. So by working with her, we were able to actually listen in on the pre-birth planning sessions and hear souls talking to each other, to their future children, their future parents, future spouses, lovers, friends, enemies in some cases. And I put these conversations word for word into the book. One of the other mediums actually had the ability to channel someone's soul, someone's higher self. So in working with her, her name is Corby Mitlide, we were able to, in some cases, speak to a soul directly and say, what did you plan before this lifetime and why did you plan it? One of the other mediums, Glenna Dietrich, is a trans channel, often channeling angelic consciousnesses, some of whom actually serve as guides to people once they're in body. So this gave me the opportunity to talk with the angels or the guides directly and, again, ask them what the pre-birth plan was. And then the fourth collaborator is a woman in Chicago, Deb Dabari, who has a number of gifts, one of which is that she's very skilled at talking with the quote-unquote deceased. So if I was interviewing someone for the book whose life challenge involves someone else who is now back in spirit, very often we would work with Deb. She would call in the deceased loved one, and we would just say to them, what did you plan with this person before you were born, and why did you plan it? And so coming at it from these four different angles, we could put together a very complete picture of why somebody wanted, before they were born, to experience something very, very challenging.
Hmm. Well, how did you find those mediums, and how did you know that they were credible?
You know, when I first started doing the research for Your Soul's Plan, the idea of working with mediums wasn't even part of my thinking. My original idea was that there must be some people out there in the world somewhere who actually remember planning their lives. And I thought, we have the internet now. I'll use it to find these people. So I got online and I went to every spirituality and New Age bulletin board I could find. And I posted a message saying, author, writing a book about how we plan our lives before we're born, if you have memories of planning your lifetime, please contact me. Well, I heard from thousands of people all over the world.
Really?
Not one of whom actually remembered planning the current lifetime. I heard from people who remembered past lives on Earth, past lives on other planets, non-physical lifetimes in other dimensions. So fascinating stories, but not a single one of them was what I was looking for. And this went on for a period of months. Finally, I sort of metaphorically threw up my arms to the universe and I said, I can't do this myself. I need some help here. And it was within a very short time of making that statement to the universe that the mediums and channels showed up and contacted me, volunteered to lend their skills to the research I was doing. And so it seemed that the whole thing was sort of orchestrated on the other side. But it just all came together when it needed to.
Mm. And that's how you know that you're on your life's path, was when it goes together just like that, huh?
That's right. Oh, and you asked a moment ago, how did I know the mediums were credible?
Yes.
Every medium and channel who offered to work with me, and there were quite a few, actually, I would have personal sessions with them, and so I checked firsthand on the quality and the accuracy of the information they were getting. That was one way that I knew. The other way I know is that after we would work with the different people I was interviewing for the book, I would always check with them and say, did this resonate with you? Did the medium or channel know things about you that were accurate, that they could not have known any other way without true psychic abilities? And so I had a confirmation from those people that these four that I chose to work with were very, very good.
Well, they must be if you wrote about them with all their help with your other people who needed the healing. Now, let's talk about some of these things that you actually helped. You had talked about profound deafness. I thought this was really interesting in your book. And it happened as a result of a previous life that this lady could not hear in this life. Could you go into that a little bit?
I'd be happy to. The story here is an African-American woman whose real name is Penelope. She was in her mid-20s a few years ago at the time I interviewed her. Penelope was born completely deaf in both ears. Now, when we went into Penelope's pre-birth planning session, we actually heard the conversation she had with her spirit guide in which they planned the deafness together. And what we learned is that in the lifetime immediately prior to this one, Penelope had the same mother that she has in this lifetime. But in that past lifetime, when she was a little girl, she heard her mother shot to death by the mother's boyfriend. Now, she didn't actually see the murder, but she was within hearing range, and she heard the gunshots that led to her mother's death. As you can imagine, as a small child, she was quite traumatized by this. And in fact, it actually led her to commit suicide later in that lifetime. So she returned to spirit with what you might call an unhealed energy of trauma, which now needs to be healed. And that's the objective of this lifetime. She's carrying that energy back into body to heal it this time around. Now, in the conversation with her spirit guide in the pre-birth planning session, the guide says to her, My dear, would you prefer to be born deaf so that no similar trauma will happen to you again, and so that you can complete the healing that you have told me is your goal for this lifetime? And Penelope says, yes, that is what I want and what I wish to do. And then what ensues is a fascinating conversation where they work out all the different details of the deafness in the upcoming lifetime, but it's based on that past life where she heard her mother shot to death, and so she brings the need for healing into this lifetime, and that's the function served by the deafness, is that it allows her to focus on that and yet not be traumatized again by anything she might hear.
You know, I find that very fascinating. I live about a mile away from the huge California deaf school for people who are deaf. And would you say that deafness comes from a previous life experience, or could it just be something that happened in this life? Or did they come so that they could discover a way or attract a way in which they could hear again? Because they're always coming up with these brand new surgeries.
You know, one of the things that I've come to understand through my study of pre-birth planning is that we are shown scenes of the upcoming lifetime. And so if you are a soul who is planning the life challenge of deafness, you would know exactly what time period and what circumstances you were incarnating into. You would choose your parents, and they would choose you. And so you would also know the economic circumstances of the parents. Now, the reason all of this is important is that I myself have a niece who was born almost completely deaf in both ears. And her family, my sister's family, is well enough off so that they were able to eventually give her cochlear implants in both ears. So when I look at her life plan, on the one hand, it's similar to Penelope's in that I believe my niece planned the deafness before she was born. But on the other hand, I don't think she wanted that experience for her entire lifetime, and that's part of the reason she chose my sister as her mother, because she knew that they would provide her with the cochlear implant. So it's a very different type of life plan, and I think we know all of these circumstances before we incarnate, and we choose exactly those circumstances. They will give us the experience we want. I think the deafness, like any other life challenge, could be planned for many, many different kinds of reasons, many different motivations. And that's one of the reasons why, in the introduction to Your Soul's Plan, I urge readers to read all of the stories in the book, not just the one that's about whatever challenge they face, because they might see their motivations in the pre-birth planning of somebody who chose a very different challenge, but chose it for the same reasons that they chose whatever their challenge might be.
Well, how does this play out with the law of attraction then? Because how does this work with the law of attraction?
What you've just asked is the million-dollar question, and it's one that I've been asking ever since I started this research. I would not presume to say that I have a complete understanding, but I'll share with you my current understanding, noting that it's always evolving.
Okay.
My understanding is that the bottom line purpose for planning life challenges before we're born is to remind us of our true nature as love. I believe that we as souls are made literally from the energy of unconditional love. We are infinitely loving. And when we come into body, we forget this. We have amnesia. And the ultimate purpose of a particular challenge is to awaken us so that we remember our true nature as love. Now, if that is correct, and if you, through the use of your free will, make decisions prior to the occurrence of a planned life challenge, decisions that are very, very loving, that raise your vibration, that utilize the law of attraction to magnetize to you positive experiences, if you do that through the use of your free will, then you obviate the need for the planned challenge. In other words, you no longer need to be hit over the head with a cosmic 2x4, so to speak, because you've made the choice with your own free will to be the most loving person you can be. And so you magnetize to yourself positive experiences of a very high vibration because you yourself are at a very high vibration. Let me give a concrete example to make this more easy to understand. Let's say, hypothetically, that a soul has had a number of previous incarnations in which he or she did not stand up for him or herself. This person had a number of lifetimes where other people were allowed to dictate what that person would do. So when this person transitions back into spirit at the end of those lives, they would have a life review, as we all do. They would see that they had responded in this way and allowed other people to dictate their life to them. And so they might very well plan another incarnation in which one of the major life goals is simply to learn to stand up for oneself, be true to oneself, lead the life that you authentically feel in your heart is a reflection of who you are. Now, if that's the goal, there might be an opportunity at a young age to raise one's vibration and start to live life like that prior to a planned challenge that would have pushed one or forced one to live life like that. So let's say that this person gets to college and they meet a professor or a fellow student who bullies them in some way. And this time, unlike the past lives, the person stands up for themselves and they say, no, I will not allow you to treat me that way. So this is done at a young age. That decision raises that person's vibration to a point at which a challenge that was planned 5 or 10 years down the road is no longer necessary. And in all likelihood, that challenge would have been much more severe than this example I've just described when they're still young and in school. So now the thing that was planned for 5 or 10 years down the road, it never even happens. They go off onto another branch of the pre-birth blueprint, and it's done through the law of attraction. They've raised their vibration, so the challenge is no longer attracted to them, and instead, higher vibration, more pleasant experiences are now drawn into the life. I think that's how the intersection of these two things works.
And that's very logical. That sounds very, very logical. That's great. So this would explain why a child would choose at the early age, infant and 1 or 2 years old, to be abused. That could have been their life's agreement, and that one in which they would have to learn how to grow out of all of the scars. Is that correct?
That could very well be one reason. But again, the same challenge can be planned for many different kinds of reasons. I have looked now at a couple cases of incest in which the person knew before birth that it was highly likely to occur. And in one of those cases, it was not accurate to say that this person wanted the incest to occur. What we found here and what we heard in the pre-birth planning session is that both the mother and father had had several previous lifetimes in which they had committed acts of incest. And so again, there was this unhealed energy that is carried forward into this lifetime for healing. In this case, the unhealed energy is a tendency to commit incest. Now, they knew that this was what they were going to be working on in this lifetime. So they went to the soul of the person I interviewed, the woman who eventually became their daughter, and they said to her, basically, we have this history in multiple past lifetimes of committing these sorts of acts. We're carrying the energy forward for healing in this lifetime. We don't know whether or not we're going to be able to do it, and so there's a risk to you. If you agree to be our daughter, this could happen again if we fail in our mission. On the other hand, we might succeed, and you would then be the child who gave us this great gift of having healed something that we've never been able to heal previously. And she said to them, I understand what the risks are, and out of my love for you, I will agree to assume this risk. And if this happens, I will use it to foster my own spiritual growth. I will incorporate the potential for this into my own life plan, and I will account for it when I plan the rest of my life. And so, unfortunately, the father was not able to heal this energy, and the incest did occur. The mother, we learned, actually had a pre-birth contract with the daughter to protect the daughter from the father. And she failed in that, too. She did not stand in the father's way. So both of them were unable to fulfill the goals they set for this lifetime. Now, when I worked with this woman, we called in the mother and the father from spirit. They were both deceased at this point. And they confirmed this is, in fact, exactly what happened. It was really a very tearful, poignant, moving session because Both of the parents were extremely remorseful, and they apologized to the daughter. They told her again and again how much they loved her. There were a lot of tears shed by everyone who participated in this. And the woman I interviewed told me later that it was extremely healing for her to hear this from her parents. So I think it helped her to put the events behind her. But unfortunately, from the parents' perspective, they didn't succeed in what they had planned for this lifetime. And so it's something that they're going to have to continue working on later.
Interesting. So the same would fall true with people who murder each other, or they have a contract that this could happen in
sometimes they have
line.
A contract. Sometimes. A lot of murders are actually unplanned. They're free will, fear-based decisions on the part of the incarnate personality. But having said that, there are some murders that are planned before birth. And I'll give you an example from your soul's plan. In the chapter on the pre-birth planning of death of a loved one, I share the story of a woman in New Orleans, Valerie, who lost her only son, Dustin, when he was a teenager to a seemingly accidental drug overdose. Now, when we went into the pre-birth planning session, we heard Dustin say to his future mother, Valerie, that he was planning a very short lifetime for particular reasons of his own. And she said, "I understand that. I accept that. I love you so much that I just want you in my life, even if it's for a very short time. And so I agree to be part of your plan." Then we heard a conversation between him and the soul who went on to become the drug dealer who sold him the drugs that eventually took his life. And what we found there was fascinating. It turns out that in a past life, Dustin and the drug dealer were both soldiers in a king's army in medieval times. And they were in battle together. They were out on the battlefield. And the future drug dealer was mortally wounded. He was lying on the battlefield bleeding to death. He was in great pain. And he said to Dustin, his fellow soldier at that time, "Run me through with your sword." And Dustin obliged him. He put an end to his life and put him out of his misery. So in the pre-birth planning session, they switch roles. And Dustin goes to him and says, "I'm planning a short lifetime for such and such reasons. I need an exit point. Would you agree to be someone who sells me drugs, which then end up taking my life? And in order to pay back, so to speak, the favor that was done in the past lifetime, this soul agrees to play that role." Now, one of the reasons that I put that story in the book is that when we look at somebody like a drug dealer, particularly somebody who sells drugs to someone that then leads to their death, naturally, we tend to be judgmental of that, and we say the drug dealer is a bad person, the drug dealer is evil, or this is an evil act, this person should be punished. And certainly from a purely third-dimensional perspective, all of that is true. But part of the reason for doing this research and writing the book was to look at it from a different perspective, that is the level of the soul. And from a soul-level viewpoint, there really is no evil like that. And in this case, the drug dealer is not bad. He's not evil. He's actually just complying with a pre-birth request from another soul who just wants to have a short incarnation and needs a way to leave when he's ready to leave. And so I think it helps us to move beyond judgment when we start to see that what appears to be happening at the surface level is really very different than what is actually happening once you look a little bit deeper.
Wow, fascinating. So based on your research, what do you conclude about 9/11 and all of those lives that perished? Did they know, or what do you think about that?
You know, I actually have not investigated 9/11 specifically, but I'll address your question indirectly by talking about something else that I do know a little bit about, and that is, you'll recall the tsunami that hit Southeast Asia a few years ago,
yeah.
And there were more than 100,000 people who lost their lives in that. What I've been told about that event is that the souls who died in the tsunami, they looked at the earth. They were shown scenes again in their pre-birth planning sessions of what the earth would be like at this time in history. And they wanted the earth to get to a particular vibration by a particular point in time. So they said, okay, if the earth does not get to this frequency by this particular time, then we agree to give our lives in a large-scale natural disaster because we know that the result of this disaster will be a worldwide outpouring of love and compassion from all the countries of the world to this region that's been affected by the tsunami. And as you might recall, Jules, that's exactly what happened. You had every country in the world putting aside their differences, however briefly, and funneling a lot of financial aid and food and medicine into Southeast Asia. So there actually was this worldwide outpouring of love and compassion, which, as I understand it, significantly raised the frequency of the planet. It elevated the collective consciousness. And this was exactly what all of those 100,000 souls had intended. So here again, you know, what is really happening is so different from what appears to be happening on the surface. On the surface, we look at this and we say, what a terrible tragedy. And from a third dimensional perspective, it is. But viewed from the soul level, it's really not a tragedy at all. It was a blessing because it raised the frequency of the entire planet.
Wow. That is incredible. So I could actually see where the events for 9/11 actually served to bring up the United States and even other countries up to a different level, because I've never seen the country ever so united in that love and outpouring to everybody, you know, that had to do with 9/11.
Well, it certainly did bring the country together. It would be interesting to do some research on that at some point and find out if that was planned or what parts of it were planned.
But you would need to do that through one of your mediums.
Well, that's one way to do it. This actually raises an interesting question that people ask me all the time. They say, how can I find out what my pre-birth plan is? One way to do that is to work with mediums and channels who have particular abilities to access that kind of information, and that was the methodology I used to research and write Your Soul's Plan. But there are two other ways you can do this. One is to do hypnotic regressions to the life between life state. And this, for your listeners who are familiar with Michael Newton and his work, this is what he did. He's a hypnotherapist who took people back to the life between life state, and found out all sorts of things that we do when we're back in spirit, not just pre-birth planning, although that's one small part of it, but he researched many, many aspects of our lives when we're back in spirit. But this would be one way, would be to do that kind of life-between-life hypnotic regression. The third way to find out about your pre-birth plan, and this is really the way that I encourage people to go, because I think it's more empowering. It's something you can do yourself. It's free. Is to do a meditation, and I have this up on my website at yoursoulsplan.com. It's a meditation in which you take yourself back to the place where the pre-birth planning is done. It doesn't really matter how you visualize it, only that you try to visualize it in great detail, because it's the visualizing of those details that will energetically transport you there. But you picture yourself in the room where the pre-birth planning takes place, and then picture in that room with you all the significant people from your lifetime. So you would see your parents there, your siblings if you have any, your children if you have any, spouses, romantic partners, friends, employers, schoolmates, coworkers, enemies if you perceive yourself as having enemies. All of these people are in the pre-birth planning session with you. And then in the meditation, go up to someone that you would like to know more about your pre-birth plan with that person, and simply say to the person, I have forgotten what you and I planned before we were born. Would you please remind me? And then just sit quietly and see what comes to you in the meditation. Now, it's important to understand that the answer could come in three forms. One is that it might be verbal. So perhaps the person you're speaking to in the meditation actually gives you a verbal answer. But it can also come in two other ways. One is that it might be a visual image. Spirit might present to you some kind of a symbol, for example, that would have meaning to you. So it's important to be open to that. And then the third form in which the answer might come, and this really I think is the most common form in which the answer comes, is that it comes in the form of a feeling. You know, feelings are the language of the soul. And so when you pose this question in your meditation, your soul is aware that you are doing the meditation, and your soul will attempt to communicate to you through feeling. So whatever kind of feeling comes over you, it's important to note that realize that it's actually a communication from your soul, from your higher self, and think about what the feeling means in regard to the person you've posed the question to in the meditation. And you can do this meditation many times with many different people and ask all sorts of different questions about your pre-birth plan. And if it doesn't come to you the first couple of times you do it, just stick with it, try it again later in the future, and see what comes up. Because this is really, I think, the most empowering way to go about this, is to get the information for yourself so that you're not dependent upon anyone else to do it for you.
Now, some people aren't, they can go through traumatic events and come out at a higher vibration, but not everyone can. So this is something that can really help the people who tend to get stuck and can't get forward, go forward, right?
You mean the meditation?
Or anything, all of this knowledge that you're bringing up right now with the contracts of life. A lot of people don't get stuck, but it's the ones who get stuck in their grief, in their ability to raise their vibration to go forward, are the ones who really need to go and examine perhaps what their agreement was before.
Yes, I think that's true. And this kind of information about pre-birth planning is helpful in some very specific ways. For example, if something has happened in your life that you feel guilt or blame about, and then you come into a knowledge of the pre-birth plan, it can be instrumental in bringing about self-forgiveness. By the same token, all the people that you may feel have wronged you in some way in your life, if you find out something about the pre-birth plan and you learn that you scripted the roles that those people are playing for you because they're challenging you to grow in certain ways, then it allows you to forgive those people. It's very useful in moving beyond guilt, beyond blame, and in particular in coming out of a victim mentality. You know, so often when something seemingly bad happens, we feel victimized. But if we understand that very often we planned whatever it is that's occurred, then it pulls us right out of that victim mentality, and that's a very powerful thing.
Absolutely, and that's the one thing that stops people from actually creating their dreams, is because of the victimhood. So once people can get beyond that, they're home free. So talk to me about this soul groups and how they play into our life planning. What's that all about?
A soul group is a collection of souls who are at more or less the same stage of evolution, which is to say the same vibration, and they reincarnate again and again, sharing many, many lives together and playing every conceivable role for and with each other. So you and the other members of your soul group would be husband and wife, mother and son, father and daughter. You would be lovers, you would be friends, you would be enemies. You would be the murderer and the one who is murdered. Every conceivable role would be played at some point. And these roles, from the viewpoint of the soul, are not judged as good or bad. That's a human phenomenon. We say that certain roles are good, certain roles are bad, certain experiences are good, certain experiences are bad. The soul does not look at it this way. The soul views everything with complete neutrality and knows that all of these roles and experiences contribute to our evolution. So you would have multiple lifetimes with members of your soul group. You would play all these different roles for each other. And although we take them very, very seriously when we're here, once you get back into spirit, there's a certain levity about it. And we thank each other for the roles that we played. We're grateful to each other for the challenges that we gave each other. And then very often we decide we're going to do it again.
You know what that brings to mind? You know, I wonder, after you transition into death, you meet a soul up there, and that you perceived was your actual enemy that you just could not stand on earth, and you're actually up there thanking them and loving them, something that you couldn't do in life.
You know, I have actually asked that question of spirit in some of the sessions we've done, and the answer was very interesting. What I was told is that we do thank those people who we perceived as our tormentors if we remember, after we get back into spirit, what the pre-birth plan was. But the process of the memory coming back it doesn't necessarily happen instantaneously after the death of the physical body. Sometimes it does, but sometimes the soul requires sort of a transitional period of coming back into spirit and having the memory come back gradually. And so if you ran into your quote-unquote tormentor before your memory returned and you recalled the pre-birth plan, then you probably would not be in a position in which you would thank them. But once the memory of the plan came back to you, then in fact, yes, you would be grateful for the role they played.
Mm. You know, I've got some people in the chat room here that want to know where the link to the meditation is again. And is that on your website?
The website is yoursoulsplan.com. And the particular page is called Accessing Your Pre-Birth Plan.
Okay.
And you can actually print out the meditation.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, okay. You've just made the chat room happy there. Okay, good. There's a couple of questions on that. They really want to get into there. And then we had another question on there. I think it's a question. It says... it's from Susie. I know my grandmother told me that when I was born, I refused to drink milk from the nurses. They'd just given up on me, and my grandmother had to talk to me for hours to have me drink milk. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. There are a number of possible explanations for that, and I'd have to know more about the person and their past lives to really account for that.
Hmm. Well, yeah. So I would... You're doing another book, aren't you, right now? Did I see that on a website, on your publisher's website?
I am, yes. I'm writing another book about the pre-birth planning of life challenges. And in fact, I'm looking for people to interview, particularly men and members of minority groups, just to give the interviewee pool a little more diversity. But really anyone who's interested and willing to talk with me about a particular life challenge, they can reach me at yoursoulsplan@yahoo.com. And just send me a little bit of a summary of what the particular challenges are that you've faced in your life. And those who are selected to interview for the next book will have the opportunity to work with the mediums and channels to find out what their pre-birth plan is. So it can be a great learning experience for those people.
Absolutely. Give that Yahoo address one more time.
yoursoulsplan@yahoo.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Great. Now, you have been quoted as saying, lives sometimes labeled failures from a viewpoint of personality are often unqualified successes from the viewpoint of the soul. So if we took that, you had talked about alcoholics or drug addicts. How can we view that differently and see that as a success in this lifetime rather than have to wait?
I think we can look at that differently and other experiences as well, simply by knowing that some of these experiences that we label as failures really are not, that they are experiences that were chosen by souls before birth, chosen very courageously and with very good reasons. And it's sometimes people who have drug addictions or alcoholism, but also experiences like homelessness, for example. You know, there's a tendency in our society to see someone who's homeless sitting on the street corner and to pity that person or to judge the person even and to say, well, this person really needs to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and get their act together. And, you know, we tend as a society to be very critical of such people. But in fact, those kinds of experiences, alcoholism, drug addiction, homelessness, these things are often planned before birth, and it takes a particularly courageous soul to undertake a challenge like that. And so I would say, Jules, to your listeners, if you're walking down the street one day and you see someone on a street corner sitting in a cardboard box and you think to yourself, get a job, then I think you're really missing the point, because it's very possible that that person was actually in your pre-birth planning session and agreed to be there at that moment in time so that you could walk by, come into your heart, feel compassion for the homeless person, know yourself as compassion, increase the amount of compassion in your heart. So that person is there possibly in service to you. And yet so often we walk by with judgments in mind, not understanding exactly how it really works.
Wow, that is wonderful. Yeah, so we need to stop our judgment of what we think about other people, because we never know. Wow, that's very good. Well, you know, you heard me talk about Jo Dunning at the beginning of the show, and we're talking about her abundance breakthrough. And some people did have a contract to be in this life and be without funds, but they don't have to be. They can change their vibration up. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. You can always change your vibration through the use of your free will, through the decisions you make. And one of the keys there is what you think. You know, thoughts are things in this world. They're very, very powerful. And not only does every thought carry a particular vibration, but because it's a thing, it goes out into the world and it attracts other energies, other thoughts to it that are of the same vibration. And this is why you so often see when people start to get depressed that they spiral down and spiral down, and it just seems to keep going. Because once you start to think negatively, you literally attract other negative thought forms to yourself, and it sort of blocks your light, so to speak, and it grows darker and darker and darker, and it really becomes a self-reinforcing, self-perpetuating kind of a cycle. And this is why it's so important to manage your vibration, so to speak. No one else can vibrate for you. You are solely and fully responsible for your vibration, and the best way to manage that is through your thoughts, because thoughts create feelings, they create emotions, and it's through the emotions in the emotional body, around the physical body, that's where the law of attraction comes in, as I understand it. Thought creates feeling. Feeling is in the emotional body surrounding the physical body. Those feelings have a particular vibration that is then emitted out into the world, and it brings back to you other things that are of the same vibration.
Right. So, again, if people are extremely worried about what I'm thinking here is that some of the listeners might feel, well, was it my contract to suffer in a depression or in a recession? And you, like you said before, you can change that contract. If you can raise your vibration up, you may not need that initial contract, correct?
Well, that's true. And even if it's something that you still have to experience, I mean, you mentioned the recession or the depression. So listeners might say, well, no matter how positively I think, I can't change the entire economy through my thoughts. Well, that's true, but a couple of caveats there. You can have an impact on the economy through your thoughts, but more importantly, you can change your entire experience of what is happening. For example, instead of saying, isn't the recession a terrible thing? What's going to happen? And then going into a state of fear, which really lowers your vibration, the people who are listening now understand that what's really happening here is that the light has come to Earth, and this economic system that was founded on greed and on corruption is really being purified so that something of a higher vibration can eventually come in. So rather than watch the decay of an old world, you could focus instead on feelings of hope and optimism about what's going to come in to replace it. And when you do that, you raise your vibration.
Ah, wonderful. Yeah, that's great. I've got another question in the chat room. It says, isn't it true that our biggest growth comes from the area of challenges in our lives?
You know, Jules,
so the person with the conflict with is your great teacher.
Jules, I'm sorry. There was a glitch in the phone line, and I didn't get all the question.
Okay, let me do it again. Isn't it true that the biggest growth comes from the area of the biggest challenges in our lives? So the person you have the biggest conflict with is your greatest teacher, and the event is just the event of how we respond to it makes the difference. Reaper.
It's potentially the case that your greatest challenges are your greatest teachers, but it depends on how you respond to them. Do you respond negatively, or do you respond with love? Do you respond with fear, or do you respond with compassion, understanding, empathy? You have the free will at each and every moment to respond positively or negatively, with fear or with love. depending upon how you respond, you may or may not grow as a result of the challenge. That's up to you.
Mm. Good. Interesting. Very good. And I, before we run, because we're running low on time here, I wanted to ask you, there are many definitions of karma. So what is your perception of karma?
I think that karma is a balancing of unbalanced energies. And I want to emphasize that, as I understand it, it is not a punishment. This is a common misconception, and I think it's an unfortunate misconception, because when people learn that there's some sort of karmic balancing going on in their lives, they often interpret that to mean that they did something, quote-unquote, bad in a past life, or they were a bad person in a past life, and now they're being punished to even out the score. That's not a correct understanding of how it works. From the soul-level perspective, karma is viewed neutrally, and it's also viewed as a learning experience. I liken it to gravity. If you stumble and fall, you don't say, gravity is punishing me, gravity is bad, I have been victimized by gravity. It would be ridiculous to talk like that. And by the same token, it doesn't make any sense to say, karma is punishing me, or God is punishing me, or the universe is punishing me. It's not a punishment. It's a balancing of energies that remain unbalanced from past lives. And the reason the karmic laws are in place is that we need them in order to learn and grow. And the soul knows that, and that's why the soul does not view a karmic balancing as a bad thing. It's just an opportunity for evolution.
Mm, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I want to remind everyone of your website. You know, the last time you were on the show, you were a huge hit. People just are craving this information, so I'm so thrilled that you were able to come back on it and talk more about this with us. The website address is www.yoursoulsplan, yours with an S, soul with an S, plan.com. And the meditation is on there as well. Go there, check it all out. Buy the book, which happens to be located on the host page. You can just click on that, and it just takes you immediately to Amazon. Or just go to Robert Schwartz's webpage, and you can buy it there as well. Thank you, Robert. This has been such a delight.
Well, thank you, Jules. It was good to come back.
Oh, you're wonderful. Everybody here is just saying fabulous. This is great, powerful stuff. Ah, wonderful. You're a hit again.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Oh, good. We'll love to have you back. So, to all of the wonderful listeners, thank you, Robert, and we will talk to you all next week. Night-night.
You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.